hate when that happens. We'll come to order on this April 5th day of our Lord 2005. Thank you, committee, for being here. We have a very informative presentation scheduled for us that I'm very anxious to hear from. Great, thank you.
Okay.
Committee, this is Jim Dixon, accompanied by. You know who I sound like there, don't you? By John Limbeck of the head of the Secretary of State's Elections Division. Mr. Dixon, welcome to the Elections and Rules Committee, and thank you very much for being here today. So please state your name for the record.
My name is Jim Dixon, D-I-C-K-S-O-N. I'm Vice President of the American Association of People with Disabilities. Right. We're the nation's largest disability membership organization with 100,000 members across the country, and the Oregon number just went right out of my head, but it's in the testimony.
Great.
First, it's really exciting to be here in Oregon because Oregon has such a well-earned reputation for running elections well, for being able to handle innovation well, and as a result, you always are at the top or next to the top in voter turnout. And I've spent 20 plus years working on, in nonpartisan ways, working to increase voter turnout. And you have accomplished what many of us have dream about every day as a state, and you should be very, very proud of that. Quickly, for my own background, I was very heavily involved in the drafting and passage of HAVA, in addition to leading a coalition of almost 40 national disability groups, Easter Seals and the like. I co-chair the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Election Reform Task Force. It's a coalition of 185 civil rights organizations. We would not have been able to pass the Help America Vote Act had we not had strong bipartisan support. Senator McConnell has been a champion on the disabled portions of the bill, as has Congressman Bob Ney of Ohio. Working with Congressman Hoyer and Senator Chris Dodd, this bill is a huge leap forward for those of us with disabilities. I want to just tell you a couple of things that happened to me while I was voting. I now can vote secretly and independently. I was able to do that for the first time last January. It was the most empowering experience of my life. Once, when I was in the voting booth with my wife, we became the first married couple to differ on politics. As I told her who I wanted to vote for mayor, she said, "Jim, I know you love me, but now I know you really trust me because you think I'm marking this ballot for that idiot." Those of us who have had to rely on third-party assistance have always wondered whether or not our votes were marked correctly. In addition to that, the third-party system breaks down all the time. The very first time I voted was in a polling place. poll worker said to me, "You want to vote for who?" I've had experiences with poll workers who have said such things to me as, "Nobody understands these referenda, so we can skip them. I'm really busy, okay?" You'll appreciate an experience that I had. Poll worker said to me, this was when I was living in San Francisco, "You voted for president, you voted for governor. Nobody knows who these state representatives and senators are, so we'll just skip those, right?" I'm pretty boneheaded, and so I've always forced people to go through that process with me. But I tell those stories because we have thousands of reports of similar experiences that we had. And it's the story with my wife was funny, but even within the household, somebody voting is really at the mercy of family members, and that's part of our fundamental democracy, which is driven by the secret ballot, is something that until now tens of thousands of Oregonians have not been able to experience. They've had to rely on third-party assistance. And with the federal funding and with the technology that's today, there's a chance to just end that. It's very particularly, I want to say three things about specific legislation. I would really encourage the legislature to pass the state appropriation to free up the federal funds. Second, there is the legislation sponsored by the Secretary of State to be able to go to electronic voting, and I would hope that can be passed. I particularly want to end my remarks, and I'm going to talk for about three more minutes, about the possibility of telephone voting. Telephone voting is, first of all, voting by phone from your home is not a new concept. Corporate America has used it. Unions have used it. In Britain, it's been used in many, many elections. It is secure. It grants us independence. It's simply picking up the phone and following the prompts. Vote one for Washington, vote two for Jefferson, vote three for Lincoln. You selected Abraham Lincoln. I'm working through the system. It's very important, I think, that Oregon be the first place in the nation to implement this. It's important not only because you have always been a leader, because you always have handled innovation well. It's extremely important that the terrific election officials at the county and state level that you have handle the implementation of a system that is coming, that is accessible, and that also solves a long-standing problem, and that is, how do we allow the overseas military and overseas citizens ensure that they have voted and that the ballot made it into the system in time? And by having telephone voting, it cuts through all of those problems of lost in the mail delays, particularly for those men and women who are in physical danger right now to protect our republic. Offering them the ability to vote by phone will assure that they can vote nationally. 35% of overseas Americans who wanted to cast a ballot didn't get to do it. And voting by phone would take that away. Now I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Dixon, for being here today. I think that you shed an entirely new and different perspective that quite frankly, none of us, we on the committee, can only imagine. So hearing it firsthand from you is heartwarming, and it also allows us to go forward having some perspective from somebody that's dealing with these issues firsthand. I had a question for you. This telephone voting that you speak of, I don't think that's a bad idea. My only concerns that come up, and I want to know if you have any suggestions, verification of who's on the other end, and maybe the security. You know, how do you ensure that the integrity of those votes cast over the phone are legitimate?
There are several vendors that have products that address both of those points. You're actually phoning into a computer, and at least one of the systems, after I have voted, it prints out a paper ballot with a barcode on it so that it conforms with Oregon law that there be a paper document. But it would allow me to then push a button, and over the phone, the machine will read the barcode off the paper, so I'm confirmed that the ballot was marked as I chose. On the all-important question of security, experts at in voting and in security actually say that in some ways this is more secure than many other systems. Each manufacturer has a different set of specific options for dealing with security, but in general, one, you must pre-register for the program. Two, you can adjust the system so that the computer will only accept a call from a pre-registered phone number to ensure that you don't get multiple votes from that phone number. That would be inappropriate if there's only one voter registered. There's a combination of a long number, like your credit card number, and a short PIN, which is also provided to the voter, so that data has to be entered before the voter has an opportunity to vote. One of the systems uses voice recognition. It's the same basic system that President Bush uses and that the Pentagon uses when they have to be on secure phones. The system recognizes your voice. You call in and register through one number, and then you call back, and the computer will say, "What's your name?" And you say, "Jim Dixon." The computer will then also have some other question that would be known only to the voter that has to be answered. Computer scientists say that even if you owned a Cray supercomputer, it would be impossible in over a span of a few days to come up with the combinations of numbers that would allow the system to allow someone into the system. And on the back end, there is a paper document produced, which is the actual ballot.
Thank you.
I would assume with the technology that's out there currently, I mean, you get the banks that where you type in your banking number followed by a PIN number, and you know these sorts of security measures are in place to some degree. I guess this question would be for Mr. Lindback, or maybe Mr. Dixon. I'm sure Mr. Dixon, either one. With the HABA funds that are available, provided we receive the state matching funds, is the purchase of these sorts of technologies an acceptable use under those? This, I guess, for lack of the $18 million that we would stand to receive.
Want to go first?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, and I'll just. This is John Lindbeck. I'm Director of Elections in the Secretary of State's office. Some of you are. I was very happy to hear that some of you participated in the vendor fair yesterday, where you got a chance to look at the different technologies that are available for voters with disabilities. What this is, and Mr. Dixon's appearance here today is part of the HABA process, in which we're educating voters with disabilities on what technologies are available out there so that they can help us make a decision about what works for Oregon. And Mr. Dixon was invited here to help us with that process as well. And the answer is yes. Our state elections plan has set aside part of that federal HABA funding to pay for whatever solution we can come up with which will meet this federal requirement. The federal law says that by January 1, 2006, each state must provide a means for voters with disabilities to vote privately and independently. And as long as I've been working in the elections field, this is something that the voters with disabilities have wanted and asked for and wanted and asked for over and over and over again. And at the state and local level, we've always had to say, we need money, we need statutes, we need help. This piece of legislation is the first piece of legislation that's come down the pike to offer all of that, including the money. So, we're in that process of deciding what solution works best for Oregon, and there will be money to pay for it. Again, we need the matching funds, as Mr. Dixon pointed out.
I've got one follow-up, and I'll let Representative Greenlick, I know he has a question. Why is it that we would limit this technology of a vote by phone to simply people with disabilities? Why not open that up to John and Jane Citizen to be able to call in and go? I mean, you're essentially doing the same exact thing, whether you do or do not have a disability that impairs you from voting at the poll or by mail. I mean, it would seem that across the board that this would be a very secure, no interpretation. Press 1 for George Bush, press 2 for John Kerry, press 3 for George Bush twice, whatever you want it to be, whatever it's set up. But why would we not do that?
We would totally support it being available to all citizens, as they do in Britain. It does clearly increase turnout. From the point of your state election director can speak to this. From the point of view of prudent election administration and to maintain Oregon's pristine record of implementing something right the first time, it's a good idea to implement the process gradually so that any bumps in the road can be smoothed out. And people with disabilities are willing to be the
gradualness.
We're willing to be the cannon fodder for the first time through a system.
Great.
But we very much would support extending it to everybody.
Perfect. Thank you. Representative Greenlee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dixon, I'd like to take advantage of you being here and go a little bit afield with a question. Mm-hmm. We've been hearing around the state on a bill that would require proof of citizenship on registration. The current system of registration requires you to sign off or to validate that you are both a citizen and that you live where you live now, and there is a proposal that would require more than your swearing under the penalty of a felony act to provide a birth certificate or a passport or something. Do you think that model might produce some undue hardship on the disabled population?
Not only on the disabled population, but on the entire immigrant population. I'm the grandson of four immigrants. My grandmother was illiterate. She went through the whole process in Massachusetts and became a citizen. But she was a wonderful grandmother, but keeping track of pieces of paper was not her strong suit. And going to the polls with some additional document is going to mean that there will be people who are not going to vote because of that. And it also, I think, in Oregon, presents particular problems because it's vote by mail. We were doing a voter registration drive in Missouri, and Missouri has a requirement to register to vote. You have to include some documentation. And there were actually several cases where people mailed, the statute said, send a Xerox of your driver's license. We actually had cases where people mailed their driver's license or their non-driver ID in because they felt so strongly they wanted to vote, but they didn't have access to the duplication ability. I tell that story because any step that you put there will be some people who it bounces out of the system. And the last point I would make on the ID provisions is many states have years and years of experience with this kind of documentation. And what happens in every state is the implementation, which comes down to an interaction between two human beings, you know, and what happens is the standards get enforced unevenly, and particularly for people of color, there's a disparate impact. That's a legal term that the federal courts have found over and over again, that those types of rules inevitably kick more people of color out of the system than whites. And so the courts have consistently found those things to be unconstitutional.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Dixon.
Are there any other questions? Seeing none. Mr. Dixon, thank you so much again for coming down, and I hope that we can call on you as a resource as we go further down this path and work with the Secretary of State's office.
Anytime. And I want to also acknowledge that yesterday's vendor fair, there have been now almost 100 such fairs around the country. This, again, Oregon did it best. It was far and away the best attended by people with disabilities. There was record keeping kept to actually measure what people think, and you had the greatest number of actual devices to be looked at. No one else was even close. And so congratulations again for having a system that truly leads the nation and that keeps our democracy healthy.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for being here, and thank you, John, for coming back before the committee as well. Thank you.
44. Colleagues, at this time, we'll be opening a public hearing on House Bill 3044. I will wait till staff gets back to read the bill summary.
Mr. Chair, committee members, HB 3044 directs the election officials to allow individuals with disabilities to proceed to the head of the line of electors waiting to vote or deposit voted ballots.
Thank you, staff. At this time, I will call forward David Beam and D.C. Winters. Welcome.
Welcome, Mr. Chairman. Legislatures. I'm an advocate for disability people in the state of Oregon, the whole state. A lot of disability people can't write and read in the state of Oregon. A lot of them can't vote because they've been in the institutionalized most of their lives. But I'd like to see that change in the policy of the state would be done as soon as possible. Every year, every governor, wherever he had, never looked at that statewide for the people, the disability people can't read and write for voting. But I had a plan to put the first one in the nation, 2001, for a drop-in center for special needs populations could get services that can't read and write and to get out and vote in the state of Oregon. The state of Oregon don't want to give it to the disability people, the state who can't fund the program themselves. And would learn how to read and write in the state of Oregon for schools. So I think this legislature needs to do, and the state of Oregon needs to look at a policy, put it back where Ronald Reagan had. Ronald Reagan went out and looked at the policy about voting in the state. California, Louisiana, Boston, Mississippi, New York. We need to look at them states and see how what them states doing for disability people. How don't bore voting? How don't gonna get there on voting time? How am I gonna be late on voting? A lot of them have to work overtime at night. But I like to see that in the morning get to get out and vote till 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning and make sure all the voters gets on time. A lot of people can't vote because the families have to work or have to daycare, watch some people, disability people at night.
Thank you, David. Mr. Winters?
Yes. I've been helping Mr. Beam on a number of issues, the crisis center and also the voting issue. This bill will help by making it clearer in the law about disability, having access. But part of that, by the definition, but the access needs to have, there need to be pictures and audio-visual display for the people that cannot read and write, but they can recognize pictures of who they want to vote. Or, frankly, there's been such a failure to educate special needs people that it has left them dysfunctional in society with no way to express their opinion about they want to become part of the community. So that we were able to find jobs, alternative type of work, because the regular, there's just a whole bunch of factors, but voting is one of the key things to get their opinion into the public square. And so the visual, the pictorial and audio sound system would be, I think, critical for many of the special needs people.
The bill would allow, and it says an individual with disabilities to proceed to the head of the line in regards to voting. Are you supporting that?
Well, I guess one reason I would encourage that to happen is because the only other way the special needs person can currently vote with the current ballot is if they bring someone who understands reading and writing with them to help them identify who they really want to vote for. And so that's without having an audiovisual component.
Okay.
And then there's got to be a way. You know, if they've got, as a practical main, ones in that are in group homes, that's the secrecy of the ballot makes it rather difficult, because there have been reports of people being mistreated if they don't vote the way somebody wants them to. So the secrecy of the ballot is important. And so those issues, this bill will help, but it doesn't deal with all the issues that need to be dealt with.
Okay. Great. Are there any questions? Representative March.
Actually, I think just a statement. In our discussion of the Help America Vote Act, perhaps some of the machines that we help people with, for example, the audible, if you use a telephone, the audible reading of the names would help for certain people. Now, for people who don't, who have a name recognition problem, and for pictures, that they would have to go to a, you know, come in and see a physical machine with the pictures on them. But it's certainly something for us to consider under that election format.
The thing is, I really like to see it's done. It's supposed to be ADA standards statewide for any services in the state. So the record does some things for the election too. So this is supposed to be a national too. So I think we need to look at it now, or you don't do it now, it'd be too late.
Part of the problem with access for people with disability has to do with the attitudes of the people who are helping them get access to vote. That is key.
Oh, absolutely. Representative Dalto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Are you saying that we're not in compliance at the state elections offices with the ADA Act?
But city council didn't do that. They went to county and did that. And that was wrong for disability people. They didn't know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Farr.
I'm just confused by the bill because it doesn't direct, if I understand exactly what you want, is you want some aid for people with disabilities in actually casting their ballot. Because this is just allowing them to go to the front of the line after their ballot has already been cast, after they've already filled out their ballot and have it in a secrecy envelope. Do I understand the bill correctly?
Yes, right. And that was part of my clarification. You seem to be testifying on a wide array of issues and very valid issues at that. But what the bill does is it specifically allows people with disabilities to go to the front of the line.
That's so what I really want to be done.
That's okay.
Could it be helping them in the state of Oregon?
Okay.
We need wheelchairs.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, the only sort of question in my mind, Mr. Chair, if I just can make a comment, is, you know, I draw a parallel. You have people that display disabled tags in their cars to be able to park in the disabled slots, and I'm sure, you know, some people wonder, well, that person doesn't seem disabled or whatever. Why do they need a disabled spot to take advantage of that? And so I wonder, you know, in the case of moving to the head of the line, if some tensions would be caused or something by people saying, well, why is that person moving to the head of the line? Or I don't know, some kind of awkward type of situation. I'm not saying that I don't support this or anything like that. It's just somebody's out there that can speak to that issue. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I had an idea. Have an ID. Go with the election. Then you know who's really the elections out there for disability people are really voters in the state of Oregon. Then you know how many disabled people ain't in Oregon. It'd be easier for the legislature to look at that, too. And it'll be easier for the next election.
Sure. Well, thank you. If you don't have anything further for the testimony,
thank you very much.
Call forward John Limbach if he's willing to come up and testify on this bill.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, DC.
Yes.
All right,
back here. He gets for sitting there. No good deed goes unpunished.
John, if you want to state your name for the record, then I can.
I'm John Lindbeck. I'm Director of Elections in the Secretary of State's office. I was chatting with Mr. Cornett, so I didn't understand the question. I'm sorry.
I'll be very clear with my question. The county clerks aren't here to testify in favor of it or opposed to it. I was hoping that Annette might be here and be able to support one of my bills that my committee brought forward. But that being, maybe I'll hold it over just to have that be a monumental case here in the state capitol. One question that comes to my mind is on line 13 of this bill. I will read it to you in case you don't have it. It says, vote at a polling place, comma, the office of the county clerk or any location described in ORS 254-472-254-474. My question is, if we were to move forward with Senate Bill 162, would this bill then not be in compliance with that bill, which doesn't remove all references to polling or Senate Bill 160?
There would not be a conflict.
There would not be a conflict.
We still have... we still consider any place that issues ballots, and that in Oregon are the 36 county election offices, to be, we use the term polling place loosely, but it's synonymous with any place that issues ballots. So no, I don't see an issue there.
Okay, thank you, John. Do you mind coming up for and answering a couple questions along with John Lindbeck? Thank you. I think in theory, colleagues, I like the concept of the bill. There are two things that come to mind. If somebody's in line at 8 o'clock and we beat this horse dead, they get to vote anyway. So I don't – it's not a time issue for me. So is there a need to do this is my need. The second question that I would have is how would – I'm reading – the person has a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits one or more major life activities. These are the three things that are qualifying under this as an individual with a disability. B, has a record of such an impairment, or C, is regarded as having such an impairment. How do you prove it? I mean, I think Representative Dalta kind of touched on the thing, the issue there. Some folks are giving disabled parking permits for various reasons that may not fall under these things. So, and I don't want my county clerks to get into an argument with somebody at the election line about whether they are or are not disabled, and force these folks to prove it via some humiliating means. So, can you speak to this? I mean, is this a problem that this, if it's a problem that the people with disabilities are not being able to vote, then I have no trouble passing the bill. But if this is a solution looking for a problem, then I don't want to move forward with it. So maybe you could speak to it directly.
Well, Chair Kitts, several thoughts come to my mind. I'm John Kaufman, Director of Elections from Multnomah County. We honestly don't know how many people there may be in our communities who are disabled and are not participating in the system, either because they have difficulty registering or voting. We really don't know. Having this vendor fair and addressing this issue is new for all of us. And we definitely want to be sympathetic sympathetic probably wasn't the right word, but responsive. It's easy to notice that someone with a CNI dog or a wheelchair, they would qualify. I think I'm more concerned in the line, in the heat of the night, in the rain, of answering questions from other voters in line. Why was that person brought to the head of the line? It almost seems to me like voters would have to self-identify in some way, maybe when they register to vote. But again, coming to an issue of proving, I don't know. And I just have to say, I don't know how many people there are who would need assistance like that.
Would it be appropriate of this?
Oh, Mr. Dixon has a.
Mr. Dixon, did you want to comment on that?
Yes, particularly for the first part of the question about people can wait in line until 8 o'clock, so why is this needed? It's a very good question. We took part in a national effort documenting problems that people with disabilities had on election day, and I can actually get you a hard number, I don't have it in my head, of the number of people who reported that they had to leave here early. But I would just tell you of two incidents from other states where there were lines. One involved a voter who was on a respirator.
When you sit down, if you could please restate your name for the record, that would be wonderful, and thank you for coming back up.
I'm Jim Dixon, Vice President of the American Association of People with Disabilities. I will be able to get you some data on the number of people with disabilities who had to leave the polling place on Election Day 2004. It is incomplete. Two incidents. One involved a person like my colleague Carol Patterson, who uses a respirator. A gentleman in Ohio had been in line for a couple of hours. The line was moving very slowly, and he had to leave because his oxygen tank was going to run out of oxygen if he stayed, waited for the line to move. He'd be out of oxygen before he got home. In Florida, there was an incident of an elderly woman who had a combination of arthritis and Parkinson's. She had a visible tremor, and she had to leave the line. The voters in line actually told her, "You go ahead," because they could see her trembling. And she got to the head of the line, and the Florida election official in this county put her at the back of the line. She went home. If I could address the question about, oh, it just went out of my head. What was this? There was a second question that was asked about the need. The identification question.
Yeah, the identification.
Yeah, it's a very thoughtful question, and we clearly would not want to add already to the burden of election officials on election day. I think it could be dealt with a combination of signage and an occasional announcement. You know, if there's anyone in line who has a disability and needs to move to the head of the line, we'll accommodate your disability. You can come forward now. That's a similar procedure that are used in some airports while waiting for tickets or while people being escorted through security. There are occasionally grumblings, but the incidence of those are very, very few.
Mr. Dixon, I'll just ask very briefly, would it be your recommendation, based on your vast knowledge of this, that the committee pass forward a bill that does exactly what this bill is outlined? I think the clerk has read the bill.
Yes, yeah, okay. Very much so.
Thank you. Representative Greenlick, then Representative March.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I'd just like to make a couple of comments at this point. One is, I think this may be a very important issue symbolically. While we have vote by mail that allows people to handle things on the symbolic level, I think pointing out, putting in statute that we care enough about disabled to make sure that if they show up at a voting place, they have the ability to move to the head of line could be very important. But on a practical matter, as we think about the voting assist devices that we were talking about, that we were seeing yesterday, it would be my vision that the polling places, the county voting offices, will have in their offices these devices. And I can imagine the combination of the lines on the last day that we saw at Multnomah County, with a group of people trying to deposit ballots and having a long line for that, and the disabled coming at the same time in the middle of that in the middle of that mix, hoping not to deposit a vote by mail ballot, but to use a voter assist device. It would seem to me this would be directly applicable to make sure that it isn't exactly coming to the head of the line, but making sure, in fact, there are separate lines for these documents. And I support this bill, not because I think it'll change the world, but because I think it will be an important symbolic step, and perhaps even an important practical step to make voting easier for the disabled.
Thank you, Representative. Representative March.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to agree with this sentiment I think it's appropriate we make a statement. I think it's also appropriate that we give the Secretary of State a lot of latitude in setting up the rules for working with the county clerks as to how this is implemented. For example, Representative Dalton's brought up the parking tags for disabled. I don't want to see any election workers out there in the middle of the street directing cars with blue tags on into a separate line because this is it would be a danger to them. So, given our vote by mail system, and for the most part, people have a number of days, and except for a lot of primarily the visually impaired, where that the voting HAVA devices will help. I think we need to make sure that we have some flexibility in this, and we might need to tweak it to do that.
I would concur with your sentiments there, and think that the bill, the viability and practical nature are very noble in intentions. I just want to make sure that we're able to implement them in the most gracious fashion.
Right.
And thus, the Secretary of State's office would have to be working in collaboration with the county clerks. My question would be of the administrator at this point. Because the bill does not specify that, is there some type of a specification that we need for the Secretary of State or for the county clerks as far as the implementation of such an action, or should that just be amended on the Senate side if there were a need?
I think it can either way. If the Secretary of State's office wanted to offer a friendly amendment to this particular legislation and then introduce that, or wait till it gets to the Senate side and introduce an amendment on that side.
Mr. Chairman, we could do it either way. There's one part of me that sort of says the reality of this is that when voters with disabilities show up in line now, and if it's clear that they need assistance, they're getting assistance now. They're being shown a chair if they need to wait or whatever. I mean, that's the reality of it. I do want to make your day, though, and say that the Secretary of State's office does support this bill.
How about the county? That just killed
me. I just said that.
I just thought you'd want to mark this on the calendar.
I want the county clerks to support it. You want to speak on their behalf, John?
I would if I could. But we do see some issues with what you've talked about, sort of defining someone that has a disability, and exactly how we're going to do that, I'm not sure I have an answer right now. But if you want us to work on it and come back with more specific information, we'd be happy to do that.
Right. Representative Dalto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At the risk of delaying the forward progress of your meeting here, the gentleman, Mr. Dixon, referenced cases in Florida and Ohio, but I'd like to think that Oregon works a whole lot better than election systems in other places, as evidenced by a number of things, not the least of which is our incredibly high participation rate and the great success of vote by mail, and that people have ballots in their hands as much as, 21 days or something like this ahead of an election, and could at least begin to plan how if they wanted to exercise their franchise, how to participate. And so I just, with the indulgence of the chair, would like to ask the gentleman from Multnomah County to just tell us how it works in practical terms in Multnomah County. Do you have a sense that there were people with disabilities in Multnomah County that wanted to exercise the franchise and participate but weren't able to, were excluded, or left? Do you have a sense of that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dalto, unfortunately, I really don't know how many people wanted to and didn't. We just don't get that kind of information. I can tell you that under the current system, we did send out teams of deputies, not of the same party, to people who requested assistance. We also provided assistance to voters in our office. We have plans to do a lot better with that by the 2006 election, with some remodeling that we're going to do in our office, and then hopefully also with the purchase of some kind of devices to assist voters with disabilities. But as far as people being in line, I think we've had situations in the past where people have been allowed to come to the front of the line. We've made sure that people have had assistance if they needed it. But I just don't know who we haven't served.
If I could respond.
Please do.
Absolutely, you would be right in your thinking that these kinds of incidents, let me put it this way, you're on the opposite end of the spectrum from the two states where I cited those examples. I just brought them up to try to put a face on the kind of situation that might occur. I also want to say that I often, when I get on a subway or a bus, people will say, let me give you my seat. And I appreciate the offer, but I decline it because it's not a problem for me to stand. So I don't think you will have all people with disabilities asking for the accommodation of being able to move forward.
I think that's a good point. Mr. Lindbeck, did you have something you wanted to add?
Yeah, I just wanted to add one thing, which is we're going through this process of trying to pick these technologies. The answer may well not be in any one of them, but we may have to employ more than one to cover the full array of disabilities. But the end goal will be the same. We want as many of these people to be able to vote at home as possible and not have to go stand in line somewhere. So to the extent that we're able to achieve that, maybe this bill will be unnecessary. But you know, we certainly don't have any problems with a bill like this.
Great. Thank you. Colleagues, I think we've beat this bill to a bloody pulp. It simply allows people with disabilities to proceed to the head of an elections line. But we've spent an hour on it. So at this time, I am going to close the public hearing. The public hearing on House Bill 3044. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3044.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3044 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Thatcher moves House Bill 3044 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I'm sure there's discussion. Representative Greenlick.
Yes, I just want to reiterate a piece of testimony in Mr. Dixon's testimony. It said in the 2000 election that 48.5% of disabled people voted. I'm not sure what the 2000 election was, but you remember in the 2004 election, over 70% of people who could have voted. 86% of the registered in a very high level of registration. So my guess is it was more like 63 or 64% of all people. We just need to, I think, try and do anything we can, and I'm sure that's the purpose of HAVA, and I'm really happy that's moving forward, to try and get there no difference between the proportion of disabled people that are voting and the proportion of otherwise able people. And I think this is just a tiny step, but probably a useful one.
No voter left behind. I think
that it's a Democrat.
Well, we got amendments for the other side. Colleagues, I think this is a great bill. I think if in fact it allows but one person that was not able to vote that it's worth our time to take the vote on here in this building. Seeing no further discussion, Annetta, will you please call the roll?
Why not? Yes.
Aye.
Jim Grant.
Aye.
Dan Colby.
Aye.
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 Aye. Bill passes.
Carry on.
I think Representative Greenlick should carry.
I think Representative Greenlick would be,
Representative Greenlick would be happy.
A mighty fine carrier of House Bill 3044. Thank you, Representative Greenlick.
You sold me on the symbolism.
And just for clarification, not all disabilities are visible.
That's exactly the point I was trying to make. Mine is a mental disability incapacity.
For a shirt choice.
Ouch.
Colleagues, at this time, we will be opening up a... We're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2260. Cletus, will you please read the bill summary? And I'd like to just say thank you to our PAGE program for being here today. Hopefully you've learned a lot.
Mr. Chair and Committee, HB 2260 clarifies statutes dealing with responsibility of public officials regarding expenditure of funds. I'd like to add my background to this because I did talk with the department. There are no substantive changes in the statute. It is just simply consolidating references to one subparagraph rather than four subparagraphs in current statute.
Colleagues, is there any colleagues, is there any discussion on this bill? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2260. Any discussion?
Senator Callender.
Seeing none, another, will you please call the roll?
You need a motion.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've gone from chair to dictator. Would you please make the motion?
Sure, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 2260 moves to the floor with a due pass.
Representative Thatcher moves House Bill 2260 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Annetta, now, please, will you call the roll?
Aye.
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 Chair votes aye. House Bill 2260 passes. I would entertain a motion for the consent calendar.
So moved.
Seeing no objection, consent calendar. Colleagues, anything for the good of the order?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I said
the good of the order, Representative.
A little taken back by the blinding speed of this committee. We've gone from zero to two in no time.
We've all seen the cartoon, The Tortoise and the Hare, and we know who wins in the end. So, with that being said, colleagues,
the rules today?
1 hour of stellar performance. We're now adjourned.
Good evening, Thursday.